What's up, guys? It's Andrew Velasquez coming to you live with another episode of Mindful Artist Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us today. And that song you just heard, Mi Corazon, is my song written by myself, produced by Aaron McLendon. Make sure that you go and download it wherever you stream your favorite music. And as far as this podcast, make sure that you share it. Give us the stars. Give us the reviews. Share it with people that you love so they can see it in their algorithms as well. And if you're a creative person that balances spirituality while being an entrepreneur, email me. Maybe you'll be a guest or someone that you know. And you just have to send an email to mindfulartistpodcast@gmail.com. You guys, I'm so excited. It's a full circle moment today. I have someone very, very special that I'm so proud of that I've looked up to for a long time for so many reasons. So it's just kind of an honor to have this individual here with us today. But before I introduce them to you, I want to give you a little bio and talk to you about who our guest is and who is this guy? Who is he? This is your one-stop shop, you guys, for all things balancing creativity, spirituality, entrepreneurship. Tori Shack, you guys, we have Tori Shack with us today. Here we are. He is a CEO, founder of Tangible Movement, a nonprofit, is a transformative advocate at the nexus of mental health and LGBTQ plus IA issues. Tori is a two-time attempted suicide survivor, just like myself, so I can relate, recovering drug addict and alcoholic, and identifies as a transgender using he, him pronouns. He graduated magna cum with a degree in history and international relations from the University of California in Santa Barbara. Uno más. Beyond his advocacy work, he is a successful entrepreneur as the CEO and founder of Resilient Consultancy, specializing in small business and nonprofit consultations. His advocacy is deeply rooted in his experience with addiction, depression, long-standing mental health challenges. Founded by Tori in 2006, Tangible Movement has gained recognition for its efforts to break down the stigmas associated with mental health, suicide, addiction, LGBTQIA2 plus equity, and gender identity. The organization achieves this by offering resilience training workshops and lived experience perspectives, presentations at educational institutions, corporations, and conferences throughout the United States. Tori's own lived experience and insights serve as the foundation for these transformative programs, amplifying their impact. In addition to leading Tangible Movement, Tori serves on the board of directors for the National Alliance on Mental Illness, also known as NAMI, Northern Nevada. He is a certified educator and facilitator for NAMI's mental health initiatives. Their contributors also extend to the Lived Experience Advisory Committee, LEAC, for the Suicide Prevention Resource Center, a certified educator for American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and lastly, serves on the board of directors for our center, nonprofit advocating for Northern Nevada's LGBTQ plus community. Motivated by his mental health recovery and acceptance journey, Tori aims to revolutionize the discourse and action surrounding mental health, suicide prevention, LGBTQIA2 plus equity, and gender identity. Through collaborative efforts and community engagement, he seeks to foster empathy and provide tangible resources to teach resilience, aspiring to create a ripple effect of a change across the nation and potentially the globe. You guys, let's give a round of applause to Tori. What's up, Tori?
How's it going?
Welcome. Thank you so much for being here. Oh my God, this has been a long time coming. I've known you for so long. I was a little Twinkie baby. I think we were both little Twinkie babies.
Yeah, totally. I don't remember who introduced us. Was that Morel?
Well, it was at 8500 Sky. Am I saying that right? 8500 Sky Fitness.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah. Okay. It was. I won't say the person's name, but
You're good. Yeah. You're good. But you were my first legitimately like official trainer ever in my fitness journey. Did you know that?
No, I did not.
Other than my brothers, who we played ball, we would whatever, lift and stuff. You were the first like official, be here at 6 a.m., eat these amount of calories, we're going to make you ripped. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And I did not know that.
Yeah, I was so inspired by just your energy, your diligence, your determination. Like you were in it. You know, I mean, I know you were in a different path, but I still aspired to the fitness journey, and I wanted to fulfill the goals. And you did. You did. You put me on this regimen, and I learned a lot. And that was just the birth of like my passion for fitness. And then now I'm married to a personal trainer. So there's that as well. But I really am proud of you. I'm so proud of you, everything you've accomplished, how full circle you've exposed vulnerability, and through traumas you were able to transform. You know what I mean? Like really evolve into this true, authentic person that you was always there, but had to struggle and hit the lows to like figure that out, right?
Yeah.
But before we go into all that, like I want to know a little bit about whatever you want to share is totally up to you. Like how did your journey start? Like where are you from, Tori? Where were you born? Like where did you grow up?
Yeah, first of all, thank you so much for having me. It's wonderful to chat with you. This is so exciting. I'm so excited for you and your growth and being on this podcast. But yeah, gosh, my journey. So I'm born and raised Orange County, California. And I always say this, I was raised in a very racist, bigoted household. My father was racist, bigoted, homophobic.
Yeah.
So I had beautiful blonde hair. I looked like the quintessential Orange County girl. Mm-hmm. And, I ran with a bunch of drug dealers. My first job was as a drug dealer. So that's where the entrepreneurial spirit came from, was selling weed.
Sure. Sure.
And then it's carried through my life. But, I started feeling these feelings towards, women, and I was extremely homophobic. I thought all gay people should be dead and they're disgusting. Right. So when I first came out, my father was just absolutely beside himself, and I didn't see a future for myself because I thought I was supposed to have, two kids, a golden retriever, the whole thing. And so that was my first attempt. It was 14 or 15, my first attempt at suicide. Survived that, and then got heavy into meth, got kicked out of high school for punching the dean in the face. I had some anger issues. I ended up going to a different high school. Got sober from meth like at 17, and then fast forward on and off, so my journey in Alcoholics Anonymous started when I was about 15 or 17 years
Amazing.
Old.
Yeah.
So I've been a chronic relapser, and I'm sober now. I've been sober for 13 years, but
yay.
Thank you. It took about 17 years. Yeah. It took 17 years going in and out for me to find that.
Yeah.
Let's see. I want to talk a little bit about white privilege too, as far as
this is your space, baby. You say what you want to say.
Yeah, it took me years to unlearn racism, and the only thing that was referred to in my household was the bad, the derogatory terms for the individuals. And one time I was hanging out with my friends who were all Mexican, and cops rolled up and started putting everybody in the back of the cop's car because they found drugs on us, and I had beautiful blonde hair. And I had the handcuffs on, and I hear that right before he puts me in, handcuffs unclick.
Yeah.
And go home to your daddy, little girl. So, white privilege does really exist, and I'm fully aware of it. And speak about it a lot as far as, unlearning racism and homophobia is concerned. But yeah, so there's that. And then fast forward, my father wanted me to be an attorney or a doctor. I'm Jewish. I didn't do any of that. I ended up going into the mortgage fitness. My first fitness job was actually at 15. And then my next fitness job was out of college.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, 2001. Because there was no jobs. It was right after September 11th.
Right.
And I was drinking heavily, living in Pasadena. And then someone said, get in the mortgage business. You can make $20,000 a month. So I got in the mortgage business. And then I ended up starting my own mortgage company. Really, I was high on drugs all the time and, all that kind of stuff. And then the market crashed. I had a successful mortgage company operating out of Orange County in Beverly Hills. I was like 25 or 27.
Market so crashed. Young and already so successful.
Yeah, except the fact I didn't save any money.
There's that too.
Yeah. I was taking classes at Barry's Boot Camp. And my whole world imploded after the mortgage business. I'm like, well, what would I want to do if money was not a thing,
Yeah.
And like fitness. And I was friends with Barry. Barry actually became my my first sponsor as an adult in AA.
Very cool.
Yeah. And I told him, you know, that I wanted to do his job and scream and yell at people and call him, you know, bad names. That's when you're gonna do that, you know.
Literally, yeah.
I can call him whatever I want, you know, the P word, you know, whatever. I don't know if it's on here, probably not, because it's going on Spotify and stuff. But you know, and so I was, you know, in studio with him, and he just during class just put the headset on and said, "You're teaching the class now."
Dang.
And it was his class, and that's how I got started in fitness.
Yeah.
And then
just like threw you in. That's it.
Tossed me right in there. I didn't know what my voice sounded like on a microphone. And I was like, what the hell? This sounds, I sound ridiculous. You know, I was like, scared of my own voice. And then I ended up working for 8500. We'll just call it that.
Mm-hmm.
Because yep. That owner actually was through Barry's Bootcamp, liked mm-hmm. my style, hired me. A couple celebrities. The first celebrity that hired me was Mel B.
Mm-hmm.
Scary Spice.
Love her. Yes. Yep. She's fierce. And her oh, always yeah. her physique has always been on point too.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So good job.
Yeah. I did it. I worked with her after one of her babies. And I helped produce and direct her first fitness video. That was
so cool.
Yeah. And then I just kind of started attracting other celebrity clients, mostly dancers and choreographers mm-hmm. and music managers.
Yeah.
All R&B world. It was a small little community.
Yeah.
And I was drinking heavily. And what I would do, I also had an eating disorder. So I would sit in the car, binge eat.
Yeah.
And then go into the and then severe depression. I could not get out of bed for, you know, I could barely drag myself to see my clients. And then I had to sit there and motivate, right?
Yeah.
And this is 8,500. That's when I really sank. And you know, the motivation, I have to sit there and motivate these people where I wanted to kill myself on a daily basis, suicidal yeah. ideations popping through. And I'd be like, yeah, go, you know, you could do it, blah, blah. I wasn't like that. I was like, I'd call people names and
yeah.
call them fat, you know, like you could do that back then. That was okay.
Yeah, it was okay. Yeah.
Can't I do that today. All right. But
I think you called me scrawny.
Yeah, exactly.
But I was scrawny, so I was okay with it. So
Yeah. And people are masochists. They love it, you know? So, you know, my first tour was with Carrie Hilson, R&B artist.
That's so rad.
Yeah. And I hit my bottom in a hotel room in New York City while I was on tour. I was fully, full blown alcoholic, full blown pill addict, full blown into my eating disorder, which was binge eating and exercise bulimia.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I can't do this anymore. And I attempted, my second attempt was in that hotel room in New York City. And I woke up to the manager pounding on the door with urine everywhere, food everywhere. Like I had no recollection of what happened that night. And I just yelled at the door. I'm like, they're like, get downstairs. The, you know, car's here. We're going to wherever, Chicago or something.
Yeah.
Can you please just put me on a plane to LA. There's a family emergency because my therapist had been trying to get me into treatment for some time. And I figured, well, I didn't, you know, I wasn't successful at suicide. So next step is getting sober again. So yeah. Then I went to treatment. I think it was 2010. Yeah. And, you know, lost all my clients, of course, because I was using so heavily. And then I got out of that 2010 and 2000. I did some more training, met up with Miguel, the artist, R&B artist.
Mm-hmm. We all love Miguel.
Yep.
Always looking good too.
I didn't know who he was when I first met him. I mean, his music manager reached out to me. He's like, hey, can you go on tour with this Miguel? With Miguel. I'm like, who's Miguel? Like, how do you not know Miguel?
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, okay, well, what do I Google?
Maybe because he just went in like humble and not like starstruck, you know?
I don't listen to R&B. I listen to like Fleetwood Mac and stuff, you know? So this was a total other world. I didn't know who Carrie Hilson. Nobody. I worked with Lloyd. I didn't know who any of these people were. And I'm like, well, what do I Google? She's like, Google Miguel Adorn. And I didn't give it because I didn't care. His money's green, just like your money's green, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So on the contract, I wrote his name, like Tori Shack and Miguel Adorn, thinking Adorn was his last name.
Got it. Not knowing the music. Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah. And manager screamed at me. I knew her, from another client. And anyway, I ended up going on tour with him. Gosh, for years, for
a long time.
Yeah. Did a tour with him and Alicia Keys and him and mm-hmm. Drake and him and Trey Songz and Bruno Mars. And so I went to
Amazing.
Australia, all over the Western world, Canada, everywhere. And that was one of the highlights of my life. I did,
Yeah.
but I was
So
still,
many things.
it was incredible.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. I just, in case our listeners or viewers, because this is on podcast, but also on YouTube, and if you are visually seeing this, I just want to commend you and acknowledge your vulnerability and being so raw and open about your experience and having suicide attempts. With like myself, I can relate. If you have any of those thoughts and you are experiencing chronic depression, you have help. You can just call 988. You can call us, a friend. But we're there for you. It's a normal human thing to experience at one point of your life. And there's a light out of that darkness. You know what I mean? And I mean, just wow, like what a journey. Like, and I'm grateful that I was kind of like in there. I met you through that. I mean, it probably wasn't the highlight of your life, but it's okay. I think we're all like little lights, right? We're all these tiny little lights throughout the globe and interacting and pathing each other's journeys. And we're the whole point of it is to like inspire each other and reignite each other's light. But with light attracts darkness too. And that can be a lot of like dark depression and substance abuse and other kind of, you know, obesities, et cetera, and mental health in general. So the fact that we're having this dialogue is the whole point of Mindful Artist Podcast. The fact that two individuals are able to be open, raw, authentically themselves and say it's okay that we messed up, it's okay that we went through these struggles, it shaped us. You know what I mean? And now we're going to hopefully be out there and inspire another younger individual, LGBTQ plus IA, POC, Latinx, whatever it is. I call you guys my kings and queens and all in betweens, right? Know that there's somewhere out there for you. There is a tribe for you. And we are proof of that. You know what I mean? The fact that we have survived both two suicide attempts at different ages and different parts of their lives. And we're still here and we still have a purpose and we're still being of service to humanity in general. So I just wanted to commend you on that and congratulate you on so many things. And I mean, how was it being a personal trainer and like rock and roll person with other celebrities? Like, how was that experience? Like, how did you even balance that? Like, that's so crazy to me.
Yeah, first I just want to mention, yes, 988, definitely. I actually work directly with 988 on some projects. So if you're, feeling suicidal or you're in crisis or whatnot, you can dial or text 988. So it's a crisis suicide hotline. But when I was working with all the celebrities, I also trained Lionel Richie. I was on tour with him.
Wait, who was that?
Lionel Richie.
Oh, that's right. I did see that picture. Oh my God. Yes. I can't wait to post all that.
And
I love
so
him.
the way I managed it is, I'm not starstruck, and some of my other friends who are trainers would party alongside the artist, right? And they
Yeah.
end up fired. So I would just do my job. Like I was tasked. I had to be with the artist 24 hours a day,
Okay.
of my job. If I'm in the hotel, they at the hotel. If at the venue, I'm at the venue. If they're out eating, I'm out with them. Like I'm just with them all the time. On the tour bus, we're sleeping in the same tour bus for whatever. But
Maybe navigating their like form and their nutritions and
yeah,
breath work, stuff like that.
yep. Working the riders for backstage for the buses,
That's so
and
rad.
yeah, and it was really cool. Sound check. The artists just want that. That's kind of how they all roll, basically, is like their
Yeah.
entourage, just goes with them wherever.
Yeah.
So I just stayed, out of their personal business. I just kept it super professional. And when they'd go out party, they'd invite, I'd decline. And that's what kept my
Good
job.
job.
Yeah,
Good
I kept
job.
my job by staying sober and just really keeping it professional. I had a great time. It was like time of my life. Getting paid
Yeah.
to travel, stay in the most luxurious hotels,
Also doing what you love and like what's
Oh
your
yeah.
passion? Yeah, like that's crazy.
And then being around people who were put on the planet to do exactly what they're doing and see their passion.
Yeah.
Like I remember standing behind Alicia Keys when she was singing her Empire State of Mind. I was on stage with her, but behind the curtain,
Yeah.
I just remember feeling she was at an arena. I think it was O2 Arena in London. This energy, just like whoo, like I felt it with Miguel, but with this, just this, just energy just being thrown at her, you know. I
Yeah.
can feel it from behind, just, you know, by the sound engineer. And
It's magnitude.
I'll never forget that feeling and how amazing and how grateful every day I was to be able to work with these amazing, talented individuals who just literally changed lives through their music.
Yeah. I mean, that's part of it too. That's what's why you were in that field for so, or you are in that field for so long, is because of the practicing of the gratitude and giving thanks and being professional and showing up, you know, every day consistently. I think that speaks volumes on, you know, your portfolio and your work ethics. I wanted to ask if you had any practices or routines that you have placed to nurture your spirituality, your creativity, like also while running a business.
Today I do. When you're on the road, it's very difficult because
Yeah.
you go to sleep and you wake up in another country or you wake up in another city.
You're just like waking up to survive. Yeah.
Yeah, literally, it's like survival mode. But it's like, and I put my running shoes on, and my when it's on the road at that time, like running and still running today is my like meditative and my emotional, mental, you know, linchpin. So I would know the artist was a pa was passed out because they were partying that before. And I
Yeah.
know I'd have like an hour of time on my own. So I would put my running shoes on, and like if I was in France, whatever country I was in, whatever city I was in, I would run.
Yeah.
And that was my thing. And it is today. So I'm super regimented. And this is how I maintain my mental health. I
Yeah.
don't necessarily suggest, you know, do all of this, but for me, this is what works. I get out of bed every day. I wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Okay.
I run at 4. Like this morning, I went for a run. I do about 6 miles. I run about 25 miles a week. And then I sit, you know, I take 4 hours. It takes 4 hours for me before I can talk to anybody, right? So I run, and then I come home, I stretch, and then when I'm running, I stop and I say 10 things I'm grateful for. My higher power, you can't see it because it's right behind the computer, but my higher power is the mountains. And I see them as the Sierras. I'm at the base of the Sierras, and they're just gorgeous. So for me, like when I was in Santa Monica, my higher power was the ocean. And I would stop at the ocean and say, you know, and pray to the ocean, like give everything up to the ocean that I couldn't handle on my plate. And always say 10 things I'm grateful for and 10 things I want to manifest. And I still do that today. And then at night, I go to the gym after work. And then I go to bed at
Amazing.
8 o'clock.
I love that. That's what I'm talking about, you guys. Like this consistent, selfish, self-love, practicing gratitude for yourself. You have, it's like when you're on the plane, like how are you gonna help somebody else if you haven't helped yourself first, right? So the fact that you're consistently setting this time aside for you, for Tori, for self-love, self-care, then you're able to be of service, then you're able to function and like communicate and provide your energy back to the practice that you're pursuing or being of service to others. That's so funny that you do that too. I'm a cardio junkie. I love running. I grew up in East LA, Boyle High, so all we had was like hills. So running was like our thing, or riding the bike or playing ball. Johnny is the one that taught me more like, you know, structural metabolic conditioning training, which that's like his passion. And I get it.
I hate
I know. I get bored of it though, right? Like that's the thing. Like it's like, okay, I get it. You can go higher now. You can lift heavier now. You can
I
do an
do it.
extra rep. I get it. I understand the logic and the science behind it, but those mountains, those Rocky Mountains, when you're running, they're running with you and you're side by side with them and you have a purpose and you have a goal to accomplish. And it's, I have something similar to that. If it's okay with you, I can share this practice. It's very similar to what you shared. It's my therapist taught me this as well. It's called the sensory reset exercise. So essentially you're going to run or hike to get to a destination, a goal that you want to accomplish and finish that morning. You need to do this alone. So it's selfish and it's coming from a place of within. When you arrive to that destination, you're going to sit, you're going to sit in lotus, cross your legs, and you're going to pay attention to five things that you see, and you're going to really set an intention and give gratitude for those five things that you see in Mother Nature. After you do that, you close your eyes. Now you're going to pick out the four things that you hear. You're listening to the four things that you hear, and you give gratitude for those four Mother Nature things. Then the three things that you smell, the two things that you taste, and the last thing that you touch. So by doing this, you're resetting your sensory system. you're practicing gratitude, you're manifesting, and then you're going to visualize like what it is that you want to accomplish and what how you see yourself at the end of that goal. You know what I mean? And love it that. Sounds like you've been doing that all this time too.
Yeah, yeah. So
that's yes. Beautiful. I love that. That it's like your therapy, it's your self-care, and it's a way to kind of be selfish, and it's okay, right?
Yeah. And that's the thing is I run, except for today, which is the first time in a while I've actually ran with somebody. It's actually, and I did my hills run. It's out in the middle of nowhere, like base of the Sierras on trail running, headlamp on, 17 degrees. And, but my normal run, I stop over this bridge, it's over the Truckee River. And the first things I always say I'm grateful for, I know it's going to sound weird, people living in California, but I love living in Reno. I say to the mountains, like, I'm grateful for being in Reno. I'm grateful for the river running below me. I'm grateful for being in nature and being able to run. I had spinal fusion surgery last September. I'm grateful for having no pain. I had top surgery last year. I'm grateful to have a great chest. And I'm just great. Say I'm grateful for, you know, where I live, my house, I have food in the fridge, I have money in the bank because I was homeless at one point, out of my car.
Yeah.
There's a lot. I'm grateful for the little things, you know?
Yeah. And even for the struggles, and you might not necessarily understand that, or even your brain won't even comprehend it at that moment, going through breakups, going through, getting a DUI, like all those kind of things, like but it's supposed to happen. You guys, like those bottoms are supposed to teach us lessons. It's not going to make sense at the moment, but later down the road, when you reflect, then you're like, oh, had I not gotten fired from that job, I would not be available for this job or whatever. So just trusting that passion or the process and surrendering to it and having something spiritually that you look up to that makes you feel balanced, that kind of helps you lose that little bit of that ego. So you're focusing a little bit more on the soul, because a human does not exist without the ego, right? But if you focus on the soul and there's a balance with those two, then you'll be able to be more fulfilled and therefore be of service to others. So I love that. Oh, I'm so proud. I'm like getting goosebumps just talking to you. Like, this is why I wanted you on this podcast. I'm so excited. So, okay. I have some exercises that I always like to do with my guests, if that's okay with you. All right. So through my research, I was able to be grateful for all of these amazing podcasts, but I kept kind of running into this like question mark, like where are people that talk like me, that sound like me, that, you know, are part of the LGBTQ community, but are also advocates about mental health in general. Like I wasn't really seeing those correlations. So that's why I'm so grateful that you are on the same kind of like philosophy and mission statement. And so I'm going to pull up this keynote that I wanted to share with you, a little bit of an exercise. And this is just through the research of learning about our brains and how it functions. And so this is a keynote that I created that I like to call Elevate Evolution, and which fears are real and which ones are imagined. And I feel that you're like the perfect person to talk about this with. And I would love to get your insight on your thoughts on this. So here are the facts, you guys. Humans are born with only two fears, legitimately, the human baby species, the fear of falling.
And I was like public speaking and death.
close. The fear of falling, because when we were Neanderthals, we lived in trees, so just survived. And so the fear of falling, to be eaten by a dinosaur or whatever creature it was real. And the fear of loud noises. So those are literally the only two fears that the human brain is born with. Like I said, these are the only fears that are built into our brain security, and they emerge as soon as we are born. These are studies that were done in the 1960s with Eleanor J. Gibson and Richard D. Walk. They did something that was called the baby visual clift, where they had a bunch of infants that were just learning to walk, and they had this fake cliff that they were scared of. But had their brain not ever known of a cliff, like, why were they scared of this cliff? Like, that's, so those are the facts. Another statistic that proves this is 1919, John B. Watson and Rosalie Rayner did the little Albert Einstein. And it's a little torturous, so I'm not going to go into too much detail about this, but baby Einstein went through it to prove how powerful this brain can be of ours. All right, so if fear is a defense mechanism, this means that every single fear that we have inherited is learned. It they're not real. Like, they don't exist, literally. And these are the most common ones that we experience as humans. The fear of failure, the fear of rejection, the fear of success, the fear of being a fraud, also known as the imposter syndrome, and the fear of abandonment, which is very common. And again, these are all fears that we just kind of like inherited through our journeys, through like our environments, through, you know, and we love our parents for what they were able to do, but through inheriting their traumas as well. So my point of discussing this is to not try to get rid of the fear, but unless learn how to embrace it, because life is too short to spend it scared, angry, anxious, sad or worried. So why not deal with them on a regular basis and actually retrain the brain to not be scared of being scared? So that's my little presentation. What are your insights on that? What do you have to share about?
Yeah, I was having this conversation with somebody else there. Actually yesterday, as a matter of fact, about fear. You know, as an entrepreneur, first of all, like, fear of failure is always there. You know, it's like, you're going to fail 50% of the time at least. Mm-hmm. And I've had, you know, businesses and they've been successful, they failed or whatnot. But, you know, I was talking to this individual and they're not an entrepreneur. You know, they're a 9-to-5er and they're afraid of losing their job. I'm like, what's the point in being afraid? You're either going to lose your job or you're not. But there's no point in the fear behind it, because all you're doing is, you know, you're sitting there and you're creating all of this tension in your body. Mm-hmm. I know it's very difficult to like say, oh, don't be afraid, right? But my advice for that is like, get into things that are altruistic, you know, like volunteer someplace or do something, you know, where you're being, if you feel like you're being of use, if you're afraid of that, you're not good enough, like the imposter syndrome, right?
Yeah.
But I think they're all valid fears. I don't think it's necessarily the fear itself that's a problem, but how you react to it.
Yeah, for sure. 100%. I love that. That leads me into my next question from your expertise and through your experience. Can you share any tips or advice for aspiring entrepreneurs looking to incorporate more creativity and being spiritual at the same time?
Yes. Incorporating more creativity and being spiritual at the same time. As far as I consider starting business as a creative venture.
For sure.
You know, I started Tangible Movement. I started Resilient Consultancy. I started a mortgage company. I started, you know, and it all stems from, you know, this burning desire inside. And I'm not an artist by any means. Like, I can't paint. I can't draw. Right? But I can start.
You're still creative, though. And you can create the body. You're drawing on that.
Yes. And like being a personal trainer, you know, my artist, I mean, my canvas was a body, you know, somebody's body. I was able to, you know, mold and shape that. But yeah, as far as creativity is concerned, like, you know, that's the most fun part about starting a business is the creative aspect of it and creating it from scratch, being like, what's my logo going to be? What is my name going to be? Like, oh, let's just, you know, and that is so exciting.
It's fun too. I see the art really in it too. Yeah.
Yeah. And the second part of the question was spirituality, right?
Whatever that means for you. I mean, I got a little bit of it, but yeah.
Yeah. So there's this product I've been trying to launch for a number of years, and the fear, there's actually fear behind it. It's not fear of failure or success.
Okay.
It's really bizarre. The product is built out. It's a tech product. I have a fear. I can sell anything, right? I can sell fitness. I can sell whatever. Well, I can sell other people's things. But when it comes to my own stuff, like, I have a real hard time selling and asking for money for my own things.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So
they call it the elevator pitch, I think.
Yeah. It's weird. And I know I'd be successful at this thing. So I'm waiting to launch it. My dev is being worked on. But regardless, there's a fear there. And so what I do to counteract that fear is when I'm running, I say the pitch because I'm going for funding. I say the pitch in my head out loud, like I'm pitching to an investor, and I go through the whole spiel. Like, I send the email out and the email gets replied back. John, like, hey, I'd like to have it. I visualize it down to a T, and then I give it up to the higher power. I'm like, I don't know how this is going to manifest, but I know that in my heart of hearts, I feel like this is going to manifest, and it's going to, I need your help. Please help maintain positivity and, you know, movement forward so that I can realize this success. And I do that when I'm running. And I also try to manifest it in my head. Like, I have that company. What does it feel like? Like you said, the sensory thing. What does it feel like to be a CEO of this big tech company that's worth millions of dollars? Like, how am I feeling? What am I doing? So I try to put myself in that position, but with the use of my higher power.
So cool. A couple takeaways for sure. I mean, you're tying in so much. You're speaking my language. You're involving your passion for fitness, which is part of therapy, essentially. And then you're tackling on these fears by almost genetically retraining the brain. So what happens is when you have those negative thoughts or inner saboteurs or little bitch voice or whatever you want to call it, everyone has a name for it. You're like, okay, I see you. I hear you, little bitch, whatever. But you give it an expiration date. And then what you do is you think of three positive qualities that you want to counteract that negative thought. And boom, genetically, you have neurologically retrained that negative thought to be a good thought going forward. And the fact that you're doing this during your exercise, during your practice of manifestation, I think is genius. You know what I'm saying? Because it's tying in the full mind, body, soul experience. And I'm excited for this new thing project that you're going to do. It's going to happen. You're going to be the CE motherfucking O or whatever you're going to do. Like, I know it's going to happen. I see the drive. Yeah. I felt your drive from when I first met you, and to see where you're at now. I'm so proud of you. Like, I'm so happy that you're the person you wanted to be forever. And you're absorbing all the good things that you were worthy of, that you knew you were worthy of for such a long time, but all this stuff had to happen, right? Otherwise, how would you get there? So where are you at with that journey now as far as like your transition? I mean, if you want to share it, you don't have to. Like,
yeah. So the last couple of years have been pretty rough. My mom died of COVID in 2020, and she was
sorry for your loss.
Thank you. And then shortly thereafter, I lost my job. I was working for an advertising agency, like within a month, and then I hurt my back, had back surgery.
Right.
And 2020, and then moved to Reno for another job, moved me to Reno, had another back surgery, and then that one failed, and then had a third back surgery.
Oh my God.
All the threes. Three, like right one after the other, and finally the last one was spinal fusion. And then in between there, like my transition started in 2019. I was like, I felt like my sister's voice said, "You're trans." I'm like, "I'm not trans. Like, stop it." Cause my dad, like I had my father in my head, you know, like being gay is worse, is bad enough. There's no way.
Right. I'm
trans, right. But of course, like I was always dating straight quote unquote women, right.
Mm-hmm.
Not attracted to lesbians. I think like a man. And, and so I happened to Google, I don't know what caused me to do this, but testosterone. And there was an article on Vice. And there was nothing else mentioned, but this woman, they were microdosing testosterone. I'm like, oh my gosh, that sounds like something I would want to do, because I didn't want to fully transition. I wanted to be androgynous. Like, I wanted to get rid of the hips and the tips, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And in hindsight, that's what my eating disorder was all about, was I wanted to look androgynous and flat, you know? So
that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I moved to Reno, oddly enough, from Santa Monica, is when I decided to start fully transitioning.
Yeah.
I met some friends out here, and they were really comfortable with the calling me they them. But like, you don't look, you don't seem like a female, you know, you're they them. And I'm like, no, I'm not using those ridiculous pronouns, you know. And so when I moved to Reno, I moved to Reno as a lesbian, she, her. And then testosterone started transitioning to, then I was she, they, and then they, them.
Yeah.
And then I had really great insurance, and I never considered top surgery. I didn't think it was a possibility for me.
Yeah.
And because my wife didn't want me to, I'm going through a divorce, but she was not okay with the whole transition and that's fine. Like, you know, she didn't sign up for that. And that's part of the reason why we're separating. But,
sure.
You know, I got top surgery and it was life changing.
Yeah.
And then what happened was my father in December. So I got top surgery last July, not this July, but July 2022. And then in December, my father passed suddenly.
Sorry for your loss.
Yeah. And then March, I had to put my dog down. So all these things compacted in the last 2 years. Okay. However, my mental health has never been better. And I kid you not, no bullshit, like none. It's because of the practices that we were talking about. And it's also because I'm in an environment that allows for my mental health to flourish. You know, based in Sierra is like no traffic, like, you know, really nice people and beautiful scenery and just being outdoors and being healthy. Had I been living in LA during this period of time with all the death and surgeries and everything going along those lines, I think my mental health, I know my mental health would have significantly deteriorated. So a lot of it is being in a place that I truly love and want to be in, and then also practicing all the things that we've discussed.
Legitimately, I relate to that so full-heartedly. In the past 2 years, same thing. I mean, similar, we had to sell everything we owned. I almost died. I smashed like 12 fractures in my orbital bone, temporal bone, hit my face in the concrete. Our landlord died. My mother died. My dog died.
Yep.
And then we picked up our lives and moved to the East Coast in 5 days with everything we owned, just 2 cars. And so I relate 100%, but I think through, yes, the practices in the past and having support, number one, two, and having the love that my mom had instilled in us and my brothers for such a long time. I feel closer to her than ever, and I feel free. And as I'm saying that, literally the clouds are parting and the sun is opening in my room. That's so crazy. No, I feel this is supposed to happen, Tort. I feel like you're on the right path. I'm supposed to talk to you for a reason. We're supposed to ignite other little lights to follow their passions, their dreams, their authentic selves, their know that they are part of a tribe. Again, my kings and queens and all in between, this is your safe space. This is your time to shine. So go out there and do something for yourself selfishly, because it's going to essentially help others. But oh my God, this is so good. Okay, I'm getting chills again. Look at it. Like, you can see that. This comes up to my favorite part of the podcast. It's called Wrapping Up Mindful Artists, Rapid Cues. Just wherever you are, intuitively, just answer this question. Don't think about it too hard. So here's question number one. Are you ready?
Okay. You want me to answer it out loud?
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah,
all right, here we go. Who is your hero and why?
Jeez. I mean, when I was growing up, before I came out, it was my dad. I don't have a hero today. I think, like, I don't have a hero.
Dad can still be your hero.
Yep.
Love it. Okay. Question number two, your favorite music album of all time and why?
That is easy.
What is it?
Fleetwood Mac.
There we go. Let's
Dream.
Go.
Dream.
Yes.
I listen so to good. That song every single day, and I probably have since I'm 14 years old. It's on every single one of my playlists. I've seen Fleetwood Mac live 3 times.
Yeah, they're magic.
Oh my God. Like,
so good.
It just is just absolutely heals my soul. Like, Fleetwood Mac and Dream's number one song of all time is that's
love.
Easy.
Yeah. I mean, no wonder it still goes viral on TikTok to this day.
I know.
Cool. I love that album as well. Okay. Last question for wrapping up Mindful Artist Rapid Cues. What is your favorite quote of all time?
Oh, okay. Fuck, I can't remember it now.
You can Google it too.
Success it goes something along the lines of, success is the ability to do the things that you ought to do when you don't want to do them. And then another one is, for me, like, it's not necessarily a quote, but it's, I don't want any what ifs. So on my deathbed, you know, that's how I kind of judge how I move through life. Mm-hmm. If I was on my deathbed, I'd be like, well, would I regret doing this or not doing that? So I don't want to say I don't ever want to regret things that I didn't do. I'd rather regret the things that I've done.
There you go. I love that. Beautifully said. Oh my goodness. Good job. Man, this was so fun. This was such a delight. I mean, I could be on a podcast with you all day. Like, this could be, I think we're going to have to do this again. That's what we're going to do. We're going to put a little bookmark in this. We're going to have to revisit. But ultimately, each episode is an hour. So is there anything you'd like to plug and share? Where can we find you and support your journey and help all the things that you're doing?
Sure. So I'm on Instagram. It's just my name, Tori Shack, Tori Shack, Shack. My Nonprofits Instagram is Tangible Movement. You can also visit tangiblemovement.org. That is my mental health and nonprofit. I also have a personal website, Tori Shack. And if you're looking for small business consultancy, it's Resilient Consultancy. Other than that, like, I think those are the places that I can be located.
Very cool. Thank you. And I will add all of the information in the description of this episode for sure. Tori, thank you so much. You're a delight. I'm so proud of you. You're super hot. Like, you're a hot guy. Like, I'm into it. I'm vibing it. Yes.
I'm more gay men than I do by women. FYI.
I've done your makeup as female. I need to do the men's grooming now. So it's a full circle moment for us. So let's go.
Yes, I'm totally down. Yes.
Photo shoot the whole nine yards.
I'm down.
Yes. I love it. You guys, thank you so much for being here at Mindful Artist Podcast, for my kings and queens and all in between. Your one-stop shop for all things entrepreneur, spirituality, and creativity. Make sure that you like, subscribe, share this with somebody that you love. This song you're about to hear, Mi Corazon, written by myself and produced by Aaron McClendon. Download it on your favorite streaming service. Until next time, make an impact in someone's life and much love and light. Love you guys. Bye. Say bye, Tori.
Bye. Thank you.